This next program is one of my favorites because during my entire teaching career, I tried my best to get the interesting extrovert, the outgoing, the talkative, the flamboyant, that person who overwhelms customers and clients, to develop a discipline called asking questions and listening. And that is a discipline for the interesting extrovert. The one reason that an interested introvert seems to do so well is that these people are somewhat timid, withdrawn, but they master the art of questioning. So let's join Doug in another great classic as he unveils, helps us to comprehend why all the answers are the questions, and thus, all the questions are the answers. Let's enjoy.
Questions are the answer. I think you'll be happy to know that the day of the snow job artist is over. That's right. He no longer has a place in our society. The man who overwhelms people with words, he just doesn't belong here anymore. Today, the great salesmen sell not by telling people, but by asking questions. And you can ask your way into far more sales than you will ever talk your way into. Now, the basic premise of this questioning technique is this. If I ask you a question and you know the answer, you're glad I asked it, aren't you? Now, if I ask you a question and you don't know the answer, you resent me for having asked it, don't you? And then, if I, the salesman, say it, you, the prospect, doubt it. But if you, the prospect, say it, it's true. So all I have to do is to get you to say it, and there's no way in this world that you can back down from it. So that's the skill we're going to be discussing here. The skill and the techniques and the tactics of asking questions. And we're going to examine here many different forms of questions. Now, while I'm going to be defining these questions by way of different kinds of selling, the thing I want you to understand is that all of these question forms you can use in your selling. Remember, this is a fundamental base. You never make a statement without following it with a question. The only reason to make a statement is to prepare the way for a question. So that is our basic and essential premise. So let's, you and I, start examining some specific question forms, because there are absolute sound tactical questions that the salesman uses in selling. The first one I want to talk about is one that I'm very sure you're all aware of. It's called alternative choice. Probably the easiest of all question forms. When I illustrate alternative choice, I like to illustrate it with an old Elmer Wheeler story. It was back during the Depression when a major chain of drugstores decided that if they could sell eggs for a nickel a piece and buy them for 10 cents a dozen. Yeah, they did buy them for 10 cents a dozen in those years. But they'd have a pretty good markup. Well, the question came, how do you go about the process of selling eggs in a drugstore for a nickel a piece? Well, this drug chain went to Elmer, and he gave them a phrase and a gesture. And when this phrase and this gesture were used in this drugstore chain, it accounted for the sale of 29,000 cases of eggs a week. And you know what? That's a lot of eggs. And you know how he did this? Whenever anyone walked into this chain of drugstores and sat at the soda fountain and said, I'd like to have a malted milk, the clerk reached under the counter, picked up two eggs, held them both up and said, one egg or two. Now, enough people who didn't want any eggs at all said, one egg. to account for the sale of 29,000 cases of eggs a week. Now, how many eggs do you think they would have sold if they'd said, "Do you want an egg in your malt?" No, they gave him an alternative choice. Now, remember this. You never give people a choice between doing and not doing. You always give them a choice between doing this, doing that, doing it this way, or doing it that way. And by the way, these alternative choice questions also make very great closing questions. Let me illustrate this. One of the things I do is to conduct what we call high-intensity training sessions for American corporations. And these sessions last about 5 days. And for 5 days, we keep the salesmen of this corporation locked up tight while we drive selling into them. Now, normally on the first day of these training sessions, we teach what I'm teaching here, the question series. And then I give them a homework assignment. I break them into teams, and by teams, they have to build a sales presentation as homework. But I won't allow them to build a presentation that has anything to do with their product. I have to get their minds out of the rut they're in. So I make them build a presentation on a wildly imaginative, non-existent product. Now, they have to develop this presentation. The next day, they have to come up in front of the class and role play this presentation. Well, a couple of years ago, I was doing this training for an electronics company located in California. You'll have to remember it was in California. That's important. And by the way, you should also know that when I run one of these high-intensity sessions, I always have a training aide, a very pretty girl. She helps me keep the troops awake. But one of the teams for this electronics company came in the next morning to make their presentation, and they brought their own pretty girl with them. It was a doll. And they started role-playing a presentation to a banker. And they were representing a firm that they called Thoroughly Inspirational Tellers. Thoroughly Inspirational Tellers. A few of you have got it. Now, they told me in advance what was going to happen. I was kind of watching the rest of the group. And all of a sudden, I saw incredulity come over everybody's face. Oh, no, they're not gonna. And then it turned to raw hope. They are. And you're right, it happened. All of a sudden, she peeled off her jacket and she was topless. This is what they were selling, topless tellers. But the thing that tore me up was the alternative choice they used for clothes. Here's what they said to that bank president. Do you want a look or shall we get you tall girls? Alternative choice. Now, obviously, there are endless numbers of alternates of choice that you can use. I'd like to recommend that you start designing some of these alternates for your own use. For example, a security salesman could use this kind of an alternate. Is your primary interest growth, or are you more interested in stocks that produce dividends? Even a musical instrument salesman who was trying to sell an electronic organ could use an alternative of this type. Do you prefer the modern styling, or would colonial fit the decor of your home more comfortably? You see, you can use alternates of choice regardless of product. And now we're going to talk about one of the very critically important question forms. It's called active questions. Now, the best way I know of to illustrate an active question is this way. How you have actually gone through a home which was being held open for inspection by a real estate salesman? Let me see your hands. Well, that's a booby trap. You've all been there. Okay, let's assume it's one of those Sunday afternoons, you and spouse are out for a ride, and you go by a home that has a big open for inspection sign, little flags fluttering in front of it, and you decide you want to see it, so you get out of your car. At the threshold, you run into a very energetic real estate salesman. He gets up. And then he proceeds to make his demonstration, and normally goes something like this. This is the living room.
Then he walks a few steps. This is the dining room. This is the kitchen. See the cabinets. This is the small bedroom. Have you ever heard this? This is guiding. Now, if you ever run into a real estate salesman that I've trained, you'll find out that you're handled just a little bit differently. Now, as you cross the threshold, he'll still get up. I feel that's fairly important. But he won't rush you. He'll wait till you hit what we call the first moment of settlement. Normally, this is in the living room. Here's where Mama is. Now, the salesman walks up, and he turns to Mom, and he says, "By the way, where in this living room would you put your Davenport?" Now, that's an active question. He would never say, "This is the kitchen, see the cabinets." No, instead he says, "What will you put in this cabinet? Dry groceries or your kitchen china?" That's an active question. He would never say, "This is the small bedroom." Instead he says, "Whose bedroom will this be?" That's an active question. Now, what's he doing with these questions? Why, he's moving you in. You see, an active question is a question you ask, which is a question your buyers would have to ask themselves when they owned the product or the... You see, when Mama owns that home, she has to decide, where will I put my Davenport? When she owns that home, she has to decide, what will I put in these cabinets? She has to decide, whose bedroom will this be? And all of a sudden, they are assuming ownership. Now again, you can use this in forms and types of selling. One other thing I want you to notice about these active questions is the fact that none of them can be answered yes or no. They all require a thinking response. Therefore, people get mentally and emotionally involved. Now, for example, a machine tool salesman uses this type of an active question. Who will be operating this new piece of equipment? That's an active question. The salesman who's leasing office space. Which office will you choose for your own? That's an active question. A farm equipment salesman. Will you be operating this new equipment? Will you turn it over to one of your sons to operate? These are all active questions, and the point I'm making here is that with questions of this kind that are planned in advance, you are able to get the person you're selling to emotionally assuming that he owns the product. Now, I recommend that these be planned in advance. For example, I recommend a real estate salesman that when they go out on a caravan where they're seeing the homes that have been listed in the last week or so, that the salesman who did the listing provides an active question for every room in the home to the salesmen who are caravanning that home. And then they will have some when it's their turn to try and sell that home. Whenever a firm is introducing a new product to its sales staff for sale, that firm, in presenting this new product, should present with the product the active questions that can be used in sell product. So these as planned methods get people involved in ownership. And after all, this is the salesman's job, isn't it?
You see, if we can get them to make decisions before they really physically approve the paperwork, decisions they're going to have to make after they own, this is involving them. That's the action of ownership. Oh, I think of so many, in fact. Most of the pros that I've taught sit down and say, "Okay, after my buyer owns my art, my automobile, my advertising program, which will increase their profits by properly impacting the community with the message, I don't care what it is, every product has decisions that have to be voted after people own it. And by answering these questions, they are involving themselves in ownership. Oh, they're wonderful.
All right, let's talk about another question form. This one is called the comparative question. Now, a comparative question is designed to eliminate something you do not want to talk about and concentrate on something you do want to talk about. That's what a comparative question does. And a comparative question always starts out, isn't it true that? Isn't it true that? A new home salesman, for example, who is selling in a subdivision that's 25 miles out of town, could very well use this comparative question. Isn't it true that today we measure distance by time, not miles? Now, what doesn't this salesman want to talk about? Huh? Distance. What does he want to talk about? Time. Now, do you realize that if this person that says yes to this question, the salesman doesn't have to bother talking about distance anymore. He's gotten rid of it. Can it be used in other sales? Why, of course it can. A truck salesman could say, isn't it true that the operational cost is more important than the original investment? Now, what does he want to emphasize? The cost of operation. What doesn't he want to bother with? The actual investment in the piece of equipment. Isn't it true that? And it's designed, as I told you before, to get rid of something you talk about and get on to something that you do want to talk about. Comparative questions.
I have to add right here that as Doug talks about this technique, I've written a close that I think was born out of the comparative question, and it's called the Best Things in Life Close. It's a dandy, and it goes like this. You're talking to a couple about a product or a decision regarding a product or service, and they say, you know, we're just not sure about going ahead. You've probably heard that, haven't you? You smile and say, I can understand how you feel, but isn't it true that the things in life that you've benefited from most have been those things that you said yes to instead of no? You said yes to your marriage, and I can see how happy. Now, of course, this little comment is optional. You said yes to your work, and it seems, as we've talked, it brings you much satisfaction. You said yes to your home, and I can feel the pride of ownership and the security and the love that you feel here. Please realize, when you say yes to me, it's not me you're saying yes to, but all the benefits that I offer with this product. And based on this truth, it just makes sense to say yes, doesn't it? Now, that's what I call the expanded version of the comparative question. Write it out, practice it, rehearse it, because believe me, this one works.
Say, by the way, do you know how you can always instantly spot a big-time professional salesman? It's easy. He has a voice habit. Cannot make a positive statement without tying it down, can he? Isn't that right? Don't you agree? Isn't it, can't it, won't it, doesn't it, shouldn't it, wouldn't it, couldn't it, hasn't it? Don't you, won't you, shouldn't you, didn't you? These are all tie-downs, aren't they? Do you have any idea of how many times I've tied you down since I started here? It's been constant, hasn't it? And now you're fighting me, aren't you? Again, won't I? It's tough to fight off, isn't it? And these are all tie-downs, aren't they? You see, what the tie-downs do is to start creating what we call a yes momentum. And once you get the head started nodding this way, up and down, it's pretty tough to change its direction to side to side. And as I say, as you're with a professional, you're saying yes, yes, yes. You're not aware of it, but he's constantly using tie-downs. Oh, by the way, there are some amateurs that use tie-downs, but you can always spot them. They've got only one tie down and they completely wear it out. You know, you know, you know, you know. Or right, right, right. Okay, okay, okay. Up in Canada, they've got a dandy. Eh. Nothing but a tie down. But the Vrow has a whole bundle of these tie-downs, and he's switching them and changing them on you all the time. And you aren't really aware of it, but you're always saying yes. And you have to build tie-downs into your vocabulary, don't you?
Oh, the tie-down. It's so exciting to brand new people in sales. They get all enthused about it. They want to say, isn't it, doesn't it, wasn't it, couldn't it, wouldn't. But let me give you a warning. First of all, there is a truth about communication and speech habits, and that is this. Redundancy in speech habits trigger that it's a learned technique. Meaning, if I say the same word, the same phrase over and over, the same tie-down over and over, isn't it, isn't it, isn't it, isn't it, the person listening to you will pick up that this must be a learned technique for getting yes. Then they'll not only be afraid of you, but they'll fight you. So you must be sensitive to the fact that we can't use the same one over and over. If you use isn't it in a presentation, then that's the last time you should use it with those people during that presentation. Not only that, you want to build one or two into your presentation that you know they'll say yes to. Here's a couple. You're looking for a quality product, aren't you? Or it just makes sense to make this kind of wise decision for your family, doesn't it? I can see how excited you are, and you'll make the whole family happy, won't you? And you know what? This type of decision will enhance the rest of your lives, don't you agree? Please sit down, find out the major benefit your service will offer your client. Then write a tie-down statement you know that 95% of the time they'll say yes to. By the way, don't change your voice modulation. Just warmly and nicely deliver it, and you'll love how you get yes momentum built, and that's really what it's all about. Isn't that right? You see, enough yeses carry the major decision, don't they? Do yours over at the end of this tape. Sit down and literally write out a statement or two that you know your clients will say yes to. Here's a couple more you might want to interject into your presentation. You're interested in increasing earnings, aren't you? Increasing profits through good advertising just seems to make sense, doesn't it? Making a decision before your competitors is something you should consider, don't you agree? They did it and they're happy. They made the right decision, didn't they? They have seen the benefits, haven't they? Please, again, at the end of this session, write two or three tie-down statements that you totally make a part of your presentation, that are natural and that flow.
All right, now this leads to another very interesting and very simple question form. It's called the assumptive tie-down. Now, what you do with an assumptive tie-down is this. You simply make an assumptive statement, then you immediately tie it down. I could say to you, for example, you do want to be a professional salesman, don't you? You are interested in making more money. That's assumptive. Aren't you? That's the tie-down. And there are endless of these tie-down questions. I'm sure that without any problem at all, you can develop your own. For example, a TV salesman. You do want a larger screen so that you can see the football games better this fall, don't you? A computer salesman. Your primary interest is in receiving more information your present equipment can offer, isn't it? You make it easy for them to say yes with an assumptive tie-down, don't you? Now, here's a fascinating question form. It's called the erroneous conclusion question. Now, this is a question with a built-in error, but it's designed so that when the person you're selling to corrects the error, he corrects your favor. And by the way, this is also a magnificent closing question, an erroneous conclusion question. Now, it's always best if you can take it out of something that has already been a part of the discussion. For example, an outboard motor salesman has found out that the man who's in for a new high-powered outboard not only wants to fish in it, but he also wants to whip his neighbor in his neighbor's boat. So the salesman could use this kind of an erroneous conclusion question. Let's see. As a fisherman, you don't want the very high top speed this model produces, do you? Now, what's the man going to say? Yes, I do. He just bought. You see, he corrected the error, but he corrected it in the salesman's favor. A new car salesman. You don't mind waiting until next Wednesday for delivery, do you? You say, I want it tomorrow. You just bought. Erroneous conclusion. A residential real estate salesman. You don't mind if we don't include the carpet and draperies, do you? I want the carpet and draperies. He just bought.
Let me challenge you right now as we get more into the advanced process that we're learning here to really think, analyze, concentrate on erroneous conclusions that you could build into your presentation that are sincere, that are true, where you ask them a question that is a mistake and they correct you. And we've heard this once before, but it's so important we elaborate and we understand. Here's a couple of examples. You might say to your buyer, you're not concerned if it doesn't do this, are you, Jim? He says, well, I really am. Then you say, well, fine, because not only will it do that, but there's some added advantages I'm sure you're going to enjoy. Or you might try this. Bill, will you be patient if I can't get it there by the first? I'll call the company and hope they will. He might say, Tom, wait a second, I have to have it by the first. You'd say, all right, I'm going to put a rush and I'll even make a personal call to make sure you get it by the first, okay? Let me make a quick note of that. Now, did you get the feeling of that built-in error, a mistake? Because when they corrected it, they bought the product. So be sensitive to it now. And when it happens, say to yourself, I just created the erroneous conclusion close.
This is the end of this side. Please turn the tape over